So the subject for tonight is metta bhavana, the cultivation of metta, cultivation of loving kindness. I think some of you may be feeling that the world of feelings is a pretty unreliable place to practice spiritually. Half the time our feelings give us hell. They're a kind of soup of anger, frustration, irritation, interrupted by moments of peace and a little bit of love. And it might be difficult for us to see how can all this mess actually be the source of awakening. Just leave me alone. Give me the breath. I was okay before. I was fine, breathing and quiet. And what do I need all this emotion for? And we know and we love and we appreciate emotions or feelings like kindness, like generosity, like our love, our warmth, our compassion, our heartfelt wish to heal others and to help. The goodness in us, we appreciate it. But we still feel it's unreliable. We feel that it's bounded. It has a boundary. And very typically, for example, we feel warm to someone else until we don't get it back. And then the warmth just cools down. Or we feel love. But so typically, the love we feel for others is mixed with control. And if they don't do what we want, if our partner starts looking at somebody else, if our child goes crazy, our teenage son and daughter just blow it, and our love is conditional. We want to control others with our love. We have forgiveness, but it's very often forgiveness conditional on getting it back. We may be friendly, but so often our friendliness is conditional on the ones close to us, our family, our friends, but not the neighbors, and not those over there, and not the Palestinians, and not the other people, and as long as it's my people, I can be friendly, but not those people. And friendliness is conditioned. It's bounded. And even gratitude, which is coming from the heart, it's gratitude for what we get. We don't necessarily feel gratitude without getting something. So all these emotions, we feel we don't trust them quite. And we certainly don't trust them spiritually because they seem so bounded and limited and conditioned on situations in life and control us. But the truth is that all these emotions do point in one direction. And it might be helpful just to consider that. They all point towards our capacity to basically let the world in. That's what the emotions do. They're letting in the world. the heart is quivering, shaking, and feeling the world. And the world comes into the heart. And that these emotions, generosity, wanting to give, compassion, feeling for others, feeling to help, feeling to love, it's all about a movement to connect an energy, a vibration that we vibrate. Our heart is vibrating with the world. When we feel this generosity, it's vibrating with the heart of somebody we need to give to, we want to help. It's a vibration in us that's vibrating with the world. And the movement is out there. So there's something all these emotions share, even though they have a limit. And we seem to be stuck and blocked at the limit. In fact, in the spiritual life, these emotions develop by themselves. I think it's quite amazing. I get a lot of questions after some time of practice by people who meditate and join the spiritual movement. And after a while, I get these questions. Well, I've been a banker for lots of years, and it doesn't feel like a very rewarding job. I'd like to change my job and become a psychologist or a shiatsu practitioner or work with elderly people or work with children. There is a movement. People seem to move towards, just through the spiritual life, move towards a different kind of energy quality. And a quiet mind, when we practice a quiet mind, when we quieten down from this craziness of life, we see things with the inner eye, then something happens to the heart by itself. We actually just can experience that. I remember some years ago, I was teaching regular retreats in a place called Givat Yearim near Jerusalem, in a house there, and it was right next to chicken lulim. There were many, many chickens next to the house. And I was in the middle of a talk, just like this, one day, and I just burst into tears. And the people looked at me, "What's wrong? What's happened? What's wrong? Something terrible happened." And I couldn't say exactly what, but I remember it to this day. I just heard 10,000 chickens calling for help. And I couldn't take it. I just heard them all calling for help, 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 help. So, and they thought I was a bit crazy. They're living with these chickens for the, you know, all the time, and everybody lives with the chickens around, you know. It's not a big story, it's just life. But generally, people get kinder when they stop the running, stop closing the doors, sit down, breathe, get quiet, see what's happening, wake up a little bit, and the heart immediately responds. The Dalai Lama said, there's only one real test of authentic spiritual path, and that is compassion. It's the only real test. And you understand why, because the compassion is just that vibration with the world that is awakening. That vibration along with the world, that you're vibrating with the world. And that's the awakening. He didn't say that about religion. I think we'll have a hard time if we put religion to the test, including Buddhism today, to that test of compassion. We cannot live in this closed, boxed-in way, we cannot live without touching and opening all the scars, tzalakot, of our difficulties in life. We just can't keep going, holding on to the painful memory, the pain body, as it's called. And as we practice, or any authentic spiritual practice, something begins to crack. And there is an opening, and the heart knows it. So we don't have to look too hard to feel the heart is part of our spiritual journey. It is there. It's always there. As I said before, we're not computers just doing our practice. The heart is vibrating all the time. So meditation and spiritual practice is always heart-mind practice. The mind doesn't know what to do without the heart. The mind is, every intention, every motivation is driven by the heart. The mind feeds the heart feeds the mind, it's just constantly happening. So all meditation practice is heart-mind. And we may be used to mind more than heart. And certainly in Tovana, generally, our retreats are more to do with mind directly, with mind than heart. But if we think about it a little bit, meditation practice is using the intelligence, ordinary tools of intelligence and awareness that we all have. No one doesn't have it, we all have it. Using ordinary tools and capacity that we have and taking it step by step to another place, to a place of wisdom. The ordinary intelligence, instead of locking the intelligence into what I need, what I want, my difficulties in life, the struggle of life, the habits, the patterns, meditation practice takes that intelligence and breaks open the boundary, the shell. Like taking off the skin of a snake, old skin. Just breaks open the old skin of me using the intelligence to cope with life and struggle with life. Breaks open that shell, and that becomes the meditation experience of expansion, of awareness, of being, of silence. And so we use the intelligence and we bring it further to wisdom. And we use the heart in exactly the same way. We use the natural capacity of the heart as practice and then break that open. And so our bounded generosity, goodness, kindness, bounded by conditions, we break that open and that becomes expanded, unconditional. They all, in a way, lead to the same place, the wisdom coming from awareness and the wisdom coming from the heart are actually the same, come to the same place. As they say in the yoga tradition, bhakti brings jnana, wisdom. Jnana brings bhakti. Devotion goes to awareness, wisdom. Wisdom goes to devotion. They come to the same thing. Interestingly enough, a little while ago, I had a evening with Rav Yehoshua Engelman. And we have occasional evenings in Tel Aviv where we dialogue on Buddhist, Jewish themes and how they fit together, how they dance together, actually. And this evening was on prayer and meditation and the difference and the similarity and so on. And I have one problem with Rav Yehoshua, which is we keep agreeing all the time. And we're trying to find places we don't agree, because he's just that kind of Jewish soul, spiritual soul, that is aligned completely with Dharma. So we keep trying to find, come on, let's disagree about it. It just sort of doesn't work. But here is a case we just didn't, we agreed. And basically the agreement was that you may start with prayer, with a lot of words and a lot of desire. I'm praying to win the lotto. I'm praying that my children will go to university. It might start like that. But the path of prayer moves towards prayerful meditation. That's what kavana, that's what dvekut in the Jewish prayer is, prayerful meditation. And meditation moves to prayer. Our meditation moves to be heartful, to be prayerful. We were doing the refuges earlier today and yesterday. The refuge is, in a way, Buddhist prayer, but in a very deep way, aligning ourselves. Prayer is aligning ourselves with the spiritual world. Prayer aligns, in other words, aligned to lechaven, to come together with. That's what the prayer does. It's a kind of collecting our energy to align it to the higher world, a higher or higher world, through a higher being. So in a way, prayer leads to prayerful meditation. Meditation leads to meditative prayer. They come together. Our meditations are not dry, they're juicy. They have juice, which is the prayer side of meditation. They have taste. They have, you know, you experience it yourself. You go outside in a meditative frame of mind and you look at the tree, and there is a moment there of respect, a moment there of warmth, of connection. That's a prayerful moment. So they both lead to the same place, but they can look very different at the beginning. And that leads me to discuss a little bit more detail metta bhavana, what it is exactly that we're doing. Bhavana means cultivation, development. Metta is boundless love, unconditional love. And as we were saying, we start with the known. We start with where we are. And where we are can be words. So we start with phrases or words. And in a way, like one spiritual teacher said, the only point in using words is to push away other words. That's all. Just to push away the words that are less important. So we use words. It's a starting place. It pushes away other words. The words invite us to a certain mood. And they are prayerful in the sense that they invite us to a certain space. We don't have to, and it's, I think, not very helpful to us to say, okay, I'm saying, may I be strong and healthy. No. Am I stronger and healthier? Did it work? Well, I don't feel so strong and healthy like I did. Maybe I was stronger and healthy before I came to the retreat. It doesn't help us very much to regard the phrases like that or to expect outcomes. It does help us to regard the phrases as using words, which is a power that we use of the ordinary mind to change the inner atmosphere, to unlock, like I said this afternoon, to unlock a closed box or a half-closed box of the heart, to invite the heart. The heart can't be controlled. You can't tell the heart, you do it. You just be loving. Go on. It doesn't work like that. The heart is not controllable. The heart can be encouraged. The heart can be invited. The heart can be given space. The heart can be reminded, but not exactly controlled. So the words, the phrases are simply an invitation that we just offer, this invitation to the heart. The heart does what it wants. The heart might come back and say, "What the hell are you talking about? Don't tell me to love. I'm going to be angry now. And I just don't agree. Sorry. I'm not playing your game. No love. Anger." It's okay. That's the heart talking. We invited the heart, and the heart is expressing what it needs to express. There's a nice image, traditional image, of practice as dropping drops of cool water on a hot plate. And what happens is, especially at the beginning, the hot plate goes psh, and another drop comes, and the hot plate goes psh, and another drop comes. That's a reaction. That's the reaction from habit. That's the reaction from patterns. So we invite the heart, and the heart might come psh, anger, resistance, don't like this. Not for me. Where's my silence? Or not. But it's a starting place. And the starting place is the only place we have. And it can be a little rough when we start, just like when we start with sitting meditation and in silence, in awareness. The beginning, it can be rough. Our back hurts, our this hurts, we can't sit for long, we get irritated, we get bored, it's the same. It can be a little rough. And same here. So the reaction of the heart can be psst, anger. We're not in control. But the invitation is there. We might start the metta practice without phrases, with just an atmosphere of bracha, blessing. It's also a starting place. Baraka, I think in Arabic, is in a way, it's got this expanded quality about that word, baraka. So we can start there. Or we can start with feelings that we know. There are many, in many retreats, when we offer metta at the end of a retreat, which is a bit of a kind of tale at the end of a retreat, but we often do it through simply inviting those boundless qualities of the heart, like generosity, kindness, appreciation of ourselves, gratitude. So we can start with that, and we did already in this already today. We started with invitation to pay attention to our generosity, our gratitude. It's another place to start. So all these places are beginning places, and we need a little patience sometimes to work with them and to work with them wisely. So the phrases, well, at the beginning we feel a little rough with them, and there may be some resistance, but the phrases with an openness of the heart or a generosity of the heart, suddenly they work. Or phrases with a certain image, or phrases with the breath, we play with it. But these are beginning places. In the ancient Buddhist group around the Buddha and the text that they wrote, they recorded. They practice metta a little bit differently. And I just want to read to you one of the suttas, one of the ancient texts of the Buddhist canon, just a few indications of how they practiced, the monks 2,500 years ago, how they practiced metta bhavana. First, preparation. And the preparation seems a bit strange. The preparation is, having abandoned the destruction of life, you stop destroying life. You abandon the taking of what is not given, you stop taking what is not given. Abandon sexual misconduct, you stop it. Abandon false speech and rough speech and divisive speech that calls division between people, you abandon it. Abandon greed and hatred and ill will, you abandon. Abandon wrong view, looking at things twisted. So, in other words, starting with purity, with the purity outside, with the purity of action, purity in life, just what we did yesterday, the five precepts, to start with there, because that like cleans the table. First clean the table, lay the table, then you can eat. So the table is laid. And then, when without any greed or ill will or no confusion, and mindfulness, being mindful, just what we were doing, with mindfulness, the monk stays for a period of time, not just for 1 second. He spreads one part with loving kindness, 1/4 of the circle. He spreads, vishadeya, he radiates. 1/4 of the 360 degrees with loving kindness. Then he radiates to the next quarter. Then he radiates to the next quarter. And then he radiates to the next quarter. And then he radiates up. And he radiates down the vibrations of loving kindness. That's the practice. He dwells, pervading, it's like spreading the entire world with a mind full of loving kindness, which is vast, which is exalted. Which is measureless, which has no boundary, no measure. Just as a strong blower of a conch, you know, in Hinduism they use the conch. The shell, the kunkia, the shell for making like a shofar. So that's a ceremonial instrument, the shell. And so just that's the conch. Just like a strong conch blower can send his signal to all the quarters and up and down. So when the liberation of mind by loving kindness is developed and cultivated in this way, any limited karma that was done, the past doesn't stay there, doesn't persist, and is gone. So it's kind of total purification of the present and the past, and is a vast practice. And the same with loving kindness, same with compassion, same with mudita, which is joy, with joy along with others' joy. And equanimity, upekkha. So these four movements, vibrations, were spread by the monks, just sitting, spreading this vibration. So it's not so easy for us, and we're not monks, and we haven't been sitting under trees 10 years. So we really need to start with a place that's easier. And that's why we start with phrases, we start with emotions that are familiar to us, we start with more of an atmosphere of a bracha or a prayer. We can do just what the Buddha said. And we can. We're going to be maybe practicing a little bit of this too. Together. There's no reason why not, but we have to find a place that is easier to begin with. it's important to be able to have the wisdom to choose what is meaningful to us. Both Simi and myself have given a lot of different offerings, metaphors, images, ways of practicing. And partly that's to invite you to feel what's right, to feel what touches you, to feel what vibrates inside you and work with that. So you can choose, like we, of the phrases, choose one, choose two, choose your language, find your way, find your own place where the heart language is clearest for you, where you can most clearly read the language of the heart. I remember one retreat that I was in Switzerland, which is a metta retreat. And in the middle of that retreat, I decided to really simplify everything. Got too complex for me. So I just said, be happy, be happy, be happy, be happy. And the retreat became for me walking retreat. And there was a forest, it was Switzerland, it was great forest nearby, and I would just walk and walk and be happy, be happy, be happy, be happy. A leaf falling from the tree, be happy, be happy. A dog crossing, be happy, be happy. And once I came across two slugs. What's a slug in Hebrew? Chilazon, believe without the shell. That's what they are? Chasufit. Well, they were mating in Zivug. Two of them. They go back to front and they surround themselves with jelly. And there were these two chasufiyot in a little bag of jelly sitting in the path. And I was like, be happy, be happy, be happy, be happy. And it was such a crazy situation, but we do need to pay a little price for love. Love doesn't come completely cheap. We do need to pay something. That's why it's metta bhavana, cultivation. Cultivation is like plowing the ground. Cultivate, the same word in English, to cultivate, lachrosh, as bhavana, to develop. It's used in the form of meaning of spiritual development, bhavana. But it's the same word, cultivation in English, lachrosh, to prepare the ground. It can be work for us. We do need to pay a price. Love doesn't just come so easy and cheap. And the reason is all the history and the pain body that we have in us, which in a way blocks the love. We'll talk more about that. That's a subject for another evening. But it needs cultivation. We need to cultivate the ground. And sometimes we pull out stones, and sometimes we pull out God knows what, old boots and old memories, and we need to cultivate. And it's hard work. And only then we plant, and then comes a steel. So when we see blocks to the love's flow, love doesn't flow necessarily, and there may be blocks. There may be anger, there may be resistance, there may be loss, there may be confusion, there may be tiredness, there may be anything, there may be just resistance, friction. Maybe we touch the heart and the psh comes of the drop of cool water on the hot plate. If we are wise, we understand that that too is the language of the heart. That the resistance we feel is the heart. And the anger that might come, or the sadness, or the difficult emotions, that is the heart. So we don't need to look for pleasant, expanded emotions. We just need to feel that the practice is opening a landscape, a noth, the heart landscape. And in there is trees and difficulties and a bore, a chasm, a jungle, a kotsim, and then a mountain, and then a lake, and then more kotsim, and more thorns. That's the landscape. We are invited just to be within the heart's landscape, to stay there, to abide there, to dwell there, day by day, hour by hour. That's the practice. It's the territory of the heart. And it brings us, being inside that territory, traveling in that territory, whatever it brings to us, whatever comes up to us, brings us to the metta, the loving kindness. Brings us to something boundless. It cracks the shell. The shell cracks by being with it, by allowing it, by letting it flow, by letting it, with our awareness and permission and invitation and practice, letting it flow. The flow is about the inside and the outside. The flow is about from me to the world and the world back to me. We started the first day with me, metta to me, and it's a very important antidote to our tendency to criticize ourselves, to judge ourselves, to be angry at ourselves, to limit ourselves, to make ourselves small. The metta to self is like an antidote. And if ever we find ourselves in that place of self-judgment, self-criticism, blame, a little drop of metta goes a very long way. It's a great medicine. So today we've been giving to self as a kind of antidote, as a kind of softening, as a kind of place which is familiar to us. But we will carry on day by day going out with self and the world, because the heart, these Brahma Viharas are about self and world. They're about something limitless. That's exactly why the Buddha's monks just simply spread. So all they did is radiated like a radio station, like Tahana Radio. They just radiated loving kindness and compassion to the world. So breaking boundaries, breaking out limitations. A little beautiful scene that I saw. I watched a film of Ram Dass recently. And Ram Dass as he is now, it's a recent film. And I saw a beautiful moment in this film where someone came to him and told a story and came to him with her personal pain. Her partner that she was greatly in love with was a peace worker, an activist, and he'd gone to South America, Colombia, to do something for peace there, and he was killed. And she was in mourning, and she came to him, to Ram Dass, for support. And she said, "But one thing I know, that, and I had a dream about it, that my love for my partner there who died never can die. It just needs to be spread more widely. My heart, my love for my partner is still there, though he died, but I know that I just need to spread that love more widely." And Ram Dass, when he heard that, I thought he was going to have a heart attack. He went, "Oh, oh, 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 you know, he was like, wow. And his response was so beautiful, as if he'd been touched to the bottom of his heart. And I thought, that's the boundless love in him, that he could hear and feel and vibrate with that beautiful story in such a strong way. The Sufi tradition talks about it as being drunk, as being intoxicated with this boundless love. And it does have something like that about it. The boundlessness beyond boundaries, beyond limits. Brahma Viharas. This retreat is a Brahma Viharas retreat. Brahma is the Indian deity of creation. And Brahma world is the world of the gods, basically, the divine world. And Vihara is a place to live. So Brahma Viharas are the movements where we live in the God world. That something about the endless, boundless heart movements bring us to live in the God world, in the divine world, to abide there. And the instructions are for these Brahma Viharas, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and balance, is actually to live there. That they're part of our life. They become part of our daily life. We live in the God world through the Brahma Viharas. The final sentence from Nisargadatta Maharaj that I think shows how the two together, they work together. The wisdom path and the heart path work together. And it's absolutely amazing quotation from Nisargadatta Maharaj, who said, wisdom shows me that I am nothing. The heart, love, shows me that I am everything. And between the two, my life flows. So let's take a couple of minutes quiet.